Chapter 3. The boarding torpedo was a blunt instrument whose uses were as varied as they were sophisticated. Though it was crude and had enough fuel and engine power for limited manoeuvres over short distances, its action was still one of the most basic of warfare. It was a projectile. It was an object launched to hit other objects as hard as possible. Its uniqueness, among other projectiles, its sophistication, came in the fact that it caused most damage after its initial impact, as the living weapons it carried stormed the passageways of its target. From that uniqueness sprang its versatility. Should the strikes concentrate on a single entry point, or be spread out, engaging the enemy on multiple fronts? Hit from one side for a spear point thrust, or from both flanks, trapping the foe in a ceramite fist? The answer depended on the ship and the objective. Was the vessel a known quantity whose layout could be factored into planning? Was the objective one of total annihilation, or more surgical? This ship was unknown. It was the creation of a species whose approaches to technology were in equal measures crude and enthusiastic. And the mission was grotesque. But there was a mission, and so there was a strategy. The mission was search and rescue through hostile alien territory. The strategy was the use of a concentrated mobile force, and so the boarding torpedoes drove into the centre of the cruiser's port flank. For Hagaren, the line between machine and flesh was blurry at best. There were times when he saw no distinction at all. Was there an essential difference between his mechanistic implants and prostheses and the organs that had transformed him into a space marine? He didn't think so. The hands of the Mechanicus hovered over both. Neither was natural. What, beyond the medium of construction, distinguished his eyes that saw radiation above and below the wavelengths of visible light from the neuroglottis that broke taste and smell down into component identifiable parts? Nothing. Flesh and metal, bone and ceramite, the physical was the physical. The body was the body. So, when the Vulcan drills of the boarding torpedoes parted metal, they were parting flesh. The torpedoes were blades sinking into the body of a living enemy and then sealing the entry wound. There was nothing of mercy in the healing. It merely permitted the deeper, more lethal wounds that would be inflicted subsequently by the transported salamanders. There was an aesthetic to this form of attack, a perfect fusion of the organic and inorganic in form and function that he found pleasing. The very act of waging war in this fashion was a tribute to the Omnissiah. The focus of the hammer blow was an obeisance to Vulcan. And the war itself was a sacrament to the Emperor. There was a trinity of worship simply in the manner in which the squads had arrived on the Orc ship. This simple truth was so clear it was a wonder it was not visible to all. But he did not need to see Barbarin's face beneath his helmet to know that the lesson was lost on him. Hagaren could read distrust in the microscopic changes in the other space marine's posture whenever Hagaren was in his field of view. There was more than distrust. There was anger running deep. Barbarin still did not see the necessity of what Hagaren had done on the verdict of the anvil. He saw Hagaren disregarding any consideration of the flesh in his effort to save the machine. He was wrong. Hagaren's judgment was sound. Are you sure? What are you? The salamanders disembarked in a large cargo bay. The ceiling was high, like those of the Verdict, but there was none of the Imperial ship's majesty here. The walls did not rise to ribbed vaults that lifted the eyes in awe. Instead, there was an irregularity to the space that offended the Tech Marine. There was a morality for the constructed, and there was none in evidence here. The walls were of different heights, varying by as much as a meter, even on a single side of the room. The ceiling dipped and sagged overhead like an iron tarpaulin. Worst of all, Hagaren couldn't shake the sense of grotesque improvisation. The space's function was the result of chance and opportunism. It was not big because it was a cargo bay. It happened to be big, and so it was a cargo bay. He was disgusted, in the sense that every bit of technical data streaming to his consciousness revealed their surroundings as corrupted. Not by chaos, but by incompetence. He was not surprised. This first glimpse of the interior of the ship matched what he had seen of the exterior during the torpedo's approach. Though the cruiser had an impressive bestial solidity to it, there was little overall planning to its design. Its shape, not unlike an elongated orc's skull, was not produced by careful design. It was the inevitably ramshackle work of many hands, guided by single-minded aggression. The greenskins could not help but produce a machinic embodiment of themselves. Brutish, stupid, ferociously dangerous, and hard to kill. There was no system, no logic to the construction. There was only instinct. The salamanders were surrounded by vehicles in various states of construction, disassembly, and experimentation. Some looked intact, awaiting the signal to deploy. Others had been dissected, seemingly by a drunk and blind butcher. Engines had been removed and scavenged with no thought as to how they might be replaced. Wheels, tracks, chassis, weapon mounts, and unidentifiable scrap littered the floor, some in mounds that rose higher than the intact vehicles. The scene was an engineering disgrace. But for all the heaped junk and parts, for all the haphazard placement of the transports, bikes and tanks, there was also menacing force. The orc way of war was sloppy, and at first glance seemed alien to any recognizable concept of strategy. But it was devastatingly effective. For every vehicle in pieces, there was one ready for battle, and another being rebuilt into something even more deadly. And there were numbers. In this single cargo bay, stacked and parked any which way, there was enough transport and heavy support to annihilate an entire company of Imperial Guard. The space was lit by guttering glow globes. Light, a shade of filth and rust, slicked the room, glinting dully off metal. The vehicles and scrap piles cast jagged shadows. Some of the shadows moved. Orcs had been at work when the torpedoes burst through the hull. Several had been pulverized by the Vulcan drills. The others had regrouped at the far end of the bay and were charging forwards, roaring with anger that intruders had invaded their territory, and with delight that an unexpected scrap was at hand. They came in a straight line, a wave of snarling barbarism, leaping over obstacles that might have served as cover in their eagerness to reach the Space Marines and start the killing. The salamanders obliged. They didn't seek cover any more than did the orcs. "Brothers," Babirin called out, "purge the savage greenskins from the sight of the Emperor. Let them feel the fire of Vulcan's judgment." "Into the fires of battle," Neelius cried.
Unto the anvil of war!
The squads chorused. Hagarin unleashed the battle cry with as much force as any, his vocal cords grating from the unusual strain. He rarely raised his voice above a monotone now, relying almost exclusively on his helm voxcaster to deliver the volume he needed, whether in discussion with his battle brothers or reciting liturgical verse over a damaged machine. But in this moment, in this surging birth of battle, he was a space marine above all else, and the passion he felt for war surprised him in its fire. The fight had been too long in coming. Anticipated while the other chapters carried out their missions, held off again while the void ships engaged in their lethal dance, its glory tainted by the nature of the mission, the struggle was nothing as simple as a military tactic. It was a need, a reaffirmation of nobility and purpose, and a battering ram of vengeance. The salamanders marched into battle. They were a steady, measured, implacable advance. They were a fist of ceramite, flame, and bolter fire. Neleus and Babirin led the two squads as a single whole, 20 salamanders moving forwards like an adamantine piston. Both sergeants carried combi flamers. They formed the blunt end of a terrible spear and fanned a spread of burning promethium before them. Fuel drums and pools of spilled chemicals ignited with the ferocious whoosh of a sudden gale. The orcs poured into the fire. The front ranks were consumed. The mob coming up from behind pushed over the bodies and broke over the rock of the fifth company. The salamanders continued their advance, hammering the orcs. They husbanded their ammunition. They knew they would be needing it the further into the ship they drove, wading into a sea of orcs. They used the initial blast of bolter fire to complement the wash of flame. A horizontal, explosive hail turned the greenskin charge into a storm of rancid meat. Through the storm came still more orcs, laughing at the spectacle of their fellows' deaths, even as they hurled guttural curses at the space marines. The momentum of their rush, though, was lost. They couldn't simply bound over vehicles. They had to avoid flaming slicks and red-burning wrecks. They had to fight past their twitching, near-dead comrades and tangling stumbles of the barely more alive. The single-minded tenacity of the orcs kept them coming when a lesser foe would have been exterminated. But even a slight bleed-off of speed and energy was enough for the salamanders to exploit. Mag-locking projectile weapons to their thighs, they moved into close combat with chainsword, gladius, and fist. Hagarin brought up the rear. His servo arms smashed flanking greenskins to the ground with metronomic rhythm while he gutted enemies to the front. His burst of excitement had faded, giving way once again to an intense, cold-blooded focus. At the speed of instinct, but with the precision of meticulous calculation, he evaluated each second for maximum damage to the enemy. He slew the orcs with a methodical brutality that would have made even his cautious pre-Mars self chafe with boredom. His new incarnation was not bored. He experienced no tedium. Instead, he was engaged in the deliberate crafting of the perfect orc kill. It was, in its way, a form of art, the only kind that he could still recognize. The salamanders battered their way to the entrance of the cargo bay. They reached the raised gate and began to run out of orcs. They turned around and mopped up. The remaining monsters did not give up. They fought as hard and with as little fear as they had at the beginning of the struggle. But then they were dead, and for a few moments there was silence. or as close to it as could be experienced on an orc ship. There was no true silence in such a place. The throb of the engines made the filth-encrusted iron walls vibrate as if from the grunts of a giant beast. Snaking, creaking pipes and conduits carried the echoes of snarls, blows, and screams. Some of the screams could have been the squeals of poorly slaughtered animals. Others surely were the agonized howls of breaking slaves. Still more might have been either. The squads moved into the wide corridor outside the cargo bay. It stretched a good distance fore and aft before dropping into gloom. It was wide enough for four Space Marines to march abreast, and Hagaren pictured it feeding vast numbers of orcs to the various flank bays, whose openings were so many gaping maws along the passageway's length. Narrower corridors, tributaries to a major river, ran off the main hallway. From what little Hagaren could see, they twisted, angled, and crossed each other in a hopelessly tangled metal labyrinth. They made a mockery of the logical, strategic function of the principal artery. The salamanders formed a defensive semicircle, covering all approaches. Babirin and Nelius turned to Hagaren.
"Any ideas?" Nelius asked.
"We can hardly go exploring," Babirin said. His tone was cold, accusatory, as if Hagaren had suggested just such a lunatic plan of action. Babirin was right, though. Slightly longer and broader than the verdict of the anvil, the cruiser was the size of a small city, one whose entire population of tens of thousands would have no other thought than to wipe out the salamanders once their presence became widely known. It was no heresy or failure of will to acknowledge that they could not take on the entire orc crew. It was madness to believe otherwise. Past Imperial encounters with orc ships was of little help. Green-skinned vessels of a given class resembled each other sufficiently in their broad lines to be recognizable as being part of that class, but in the specifics, each was its own unique monster, shaped by the whim of its commander and the demented experimentation of his mech boys. Relying on previously experienced layouts was just as likely to lead to dead ends and disaster as one's objective. Hagaren might have been willing to make some educated guesses based on existing data if the salamander's target had been the bridge or the engine room, but they were here to find a single prisoner. Hagaren stepped back into the cargo bay. In the wall to the left of the gate was a large metal box. Its location was promising. So was the sound of sparks and angry hornets coming from inside. Hagaren opened the panel. If an Imperial engineer had produced such a collection of wires, circuits, and outlets, he would have been shot had he avoided electrocution long enough to reach the firing squad. It looked like a death trap, and not a power source for the orcs working on the vehicles in the bay. Sparks jumped from wires that had little or no insulation. Through his helmet's rebreather, Hagaren picked up a powerful smell of ozone. He accepted all of this as normal. He had long ago learned to accept that orc technology worked in defiance of common sense. His mechadendrites moved towards the electrical snake pit, but he hesitated before making contact, forging a mental shield from his prayers to the Omnissiah. Though he spoke the words aloud, the principal force of the ritual was internal, a ceremony between his flesh and machine, mind and spirit. A communion in that sacred place where the self was still evolving out of the fusion between salamander and machine.
The link he was about to attempt was dangerous. He was aware of no precedent for it, nor did he even know if it was religiously sound. He had been thinking about the act and its possible consequences since Malsibar had first assigned him to this boarding mission, and had tried to think of an alternative means of acquiring the necessary information. There was none. He thought back to the briefing, to the look Malsibar had given him as he had saluted, arms crossed to slap chest plate before leaving the strategium. The captain did not have an expressive face, and his look of stoic pragmatism did not change then. But Hagaren had thought at the time, and was convinced now, that there had been a glimmer in his eye, a hint of repressed regret. He had known. He had known the step Hagaren would have to take, but he could not let an impulse of sympathy compromise the mission, just as he had to swallow the revulsion that came with ordering the rescue of an Eldar. Duty came before self, and the self must be used in the furtherance of duty. The principles were that simple. Simple, too, was the equation that now confronted Hagaren. Personal risk was irrelevant. The mission was crucial to the survival of far more than a local system. The Eldar Witch must be found. There was only one salamander who could find him, and there was only one way to do so. With the equation solved, the reasons to hesitate evaporated like the mirages they were. Strengthened by resolve and communion with the technical purity of the machine god, Hagaren linked himself to the cruiser's electrical system. It was like stepping into a surging river of raw effluent. Hagaren could imagine no machine realm more disgusting, unless it were one corrupted by chaos itself, and into those waters he would not have waded, for the risk of contamination was so high. He would have doomed himself, his mission, and everyone and everything he had been trying to save. As it was, he strengthened his mental barriers of purity before he opened himself up to the full picture of debased circuitry that coursed through the ship. The cruiser appeared to him as a pulsating line schematic. It was drawn by the currents flowing down cables and through circuits across the ship. Zones of heavy electrical use shone brightly, the lines thick with energy. Bridge, engine room, and weapon systems shone like suns. Hagaren was contemplating a three-dimensional grid in the shape of an orc cruiser. There was no matter to the vision, nothing but void between the lines, but the ship did not appear insubstantial. It was just as vicious in this incarnation as in its physical one. The flickering light beast was a carnivore on a perpetual hunt, lashing out at the entire universe. It was energy sculpted into rage, and it was inarticulate. But though it would not speak, perhaps it could be read. The Eldar, the salamander's sort, could be in three possible states. He could be dead, though they had the assurance of the storm seer that he was not. Therefore, he was either engaged in the labor of a slave, in which case he could be almost anywhere on the ship, or he was in a cell. And if he was suffering under the green skin lash, he would, sooner or later, be returned to his cell. That was the target Hagaren had to identify. Slave pens would be allocated the bare minimum of energy resources. Orcs being what they were, the simplest means of containing their captives would be used, likely little more than a large space in which they could toss the prisoners, probably in the lower decks. There, minimal circuitry surrounding a void towards the bottom center of the hull. Only the most sporadic tracery of electrical activity running in those bleak walls. No quick access to cargo hatches or weapons systems there. Anything kept in that space would count for very little. The area was very large, too. It could hold thousands. He had narrowed the search, but not enough. Hagaren opened himself up a bit more to the ship. His awareness closed in on that large emptiness in the grid. The faint energy demands, invisible when blotted by the incandescence of the full ship, became clearer when he looked at the low-use zone in isolation. "Find one prisoner," he told himself. "Read the electronic entrails and find one prisoner." He scanned the entire zone multiple times before the odd detail popped out. Towards the bottom, near the prow end of the space, there was a small but constant pulse. Someone was drawing on the grid. Not a slave, but in the slave quarters. Guards, Hagaren surmised. A small number and in an odd spot. The location was not quite on the perimeter, where even orcs would find it logical to place security for the prison as a whole. And indeed, when he pulled back for a moment, Hagaren saw a glow that likely was the principal guard post. The other, weaker, smaller shine was inside the pen. Extra guards for select prisoners. Special prisoners. An Eldar seer would be very special. Orcs were extremely superstitious, and an enemy who knew what they were going to do before they did would be a prize catch. They would be nervous about what he might be capable of, but also proud to have caught him. He would be an anxiety-inducing trophy. The commander who caught him would expend greater effort in keeping him alive, confined, and helpless. Hagaren pulled out from the orc grid. As he left the cargo bay, he felt a fading aftertaste of his link with the cruiser. It was a stuttering background vibration in his mind and soul, and a shedding of tainted ash. The purity of his link to the Omnisire had been compromised, and he didn't know if it could be cleansed. He rejoined his squad. His consciousness had been away from the physical world for less than 10 seconds, but even in that lapse of time, events had moved forwards. The noise of the cruiser was ramping up. Retaliation was on its way and closing in. "Well?" Babarin asked. "I have a location for the prisoner." He filled them in.
"Well done, brother," Nelius said.
Babarin was less enthusiastic. "Is this a certainty or a surmise?"
"A surmise."
Hagaren felt no shame in stating the obvious. Babarin nodded towards the iron depths of the branching corridors.
"You will have Brother Sergeant Nelius and myself rest the fate of our squads on a surmise that gives us little more to go on than down, center, and four. Forgive me if I wish for something a little more concrete."
"Don't be so churlish, brother," Nelius put in. "Tekmarin Hagaren has done well. He hasn't just narrowed the field of our search. He has provided us with an actual destination."
"What of the path to it?"
"Through the bodies of orcs," Hagaren said.
Nelius laughed. He clapped Babarin on the pauldron.
"Spoken like a true brother, no? And so to war."
"And so to war,"
Babarin repeated. There was none of Nelius's humour in his tone, but there was pure determination. Whatever distrust Babarin felt for Hagaren, he was going to use the information he'd been given, and he would complete the mission. Hagaren asked for nothing more. faintly, barely detectable at the back of his mind, like a half-heard voice that disappears in a crowd, came a tiny echo of regret. It served no purpose, so he ignored it. Cacophony was heading for the salamanders. It boomed around the corners like an avalanche of boulders and swine. It was coming from all sides.
"They come to repel us, brothers," Babirin thundered. "They believe we are a threat. Let us show the greenskins how right they are and bring war on our terms down on their skulls. Form up."
He led the way down the nearest side corridor.
"At my side, Hagarin," he said. "Point us the way if you can."
Hagarin could. He had paid for this ability by acquiring a taint on his soul. But yes, he could point the way. The salamanders moved deeper into the ship. They were a solid mass of force incarnate, travelling down the corridor, one whose advance would not be stopped by so weak an obstacle as flesh and bone. The orcs threw the obstacle at them anyway. The squads hit the first wave of defenders around the third bend of the passage, just as it reached an intersection with another, larger corridor. The salamanders did not stop. Two trains collided in cramped quarters. One was Ceramite and Faith, the other Muscle and Rage. The crunch of bodies was almost loud enough to drown the howling of the orcs. The salamanders tore into their foes with chainsword and gladius. Blades dug into meat, severing arms and heads. Motors whined with hate and organs spilled onto the floor. The passageway turned into a Stygian abattoir, mired in pulp and blood. The front line of the Space Marines took the initial impact of the forces, but as the salamanders advanced, the sheer pressure and numbers of the orcs squeezed Xenos warriors past the sergeants. Nocturne's sons closed ranks more tightly. Their formation became a clenched fist. There was barely room to swing a blade, but there was plenty of killing for all, and not a bolter round needed. The combat was close, personal, tactile. Hagaren's servo arms reached over his head, striking down to crush skulls with their vice grips. He stabbed forwards with his combat blade through armor deep into an orc's gut. Then he cut upwards, slitting the beast open. As it fell, he snapped his fist out, driving the next greenskin's nose into its brain. The head was dead, but the orc swung at him one more time before it fell, bouncing its axe against his shoulder. Then it was down, and Hagarin could take another step forwards. They were wading through a green quagmire, and their progress was agonizing. The salamanders reached the intersection. The space opened up, and there was room to swing. The bulk of the orcs were storming in from the left. The path to the right was almost clear. The squads took it, mowing down the few orcs in the way, grinding them to paste.
"Move!"
Babirin exhorted, and the salamanders did. They took the corridor at forced march speed. Brother Corbin and Apothecary Nkrumor, forming the rear guard, unleashed a punishing wave with their flamers, creating a temporary barricade with the orc dead. Smoke choked the passageway, filtered out by rebreathers, but blinding and smothering the orcs. The greenskin attack slowed, and the salamanders gained ground. Old instincts died hard. Hagarin found that he had to remind himself that they were not retreating. They were not fleeing the orcs. They were stabbing their blades deeper into the ship.
"We have to do better," Babirin said.
He was right, Hagarin knew. They had picked up speed, and they were moving in the right general direction, but taking corridors at random in the hope that they would lead down into the hull was not a strategy, and time was not an ally. He looked up. The ceiling was idiocy. Pipes leaking steam, pipes leaking smoke, pipes dripping filth. Exposed conduits, tangled cables. He accessed the memory block that held the image of the cruiser's power grid. He traced the lines leading from the salamander's current location to the target. He pointed to one of the cables.
"We follow that one for now," he said. "Three turns down one deck. Then there will be another."
"Another surmise?" Babirin asked.
"A map," Hagarin answered, keeping the grid visible to his mind's eye.
Babirin nodded once. Whatever he thought of Hagarin's loyalty or judgment, he had stopped questioning his expertise.
"Lead us," he said.
Hagarin did. The salamander's drive gathered momentum. The Techmarine took the force from cable to cable. There was no hesitation. He had committed himself to a route, and it was beacon clear to him. He did not know if the end of the path held what they sought. He thought it might, but he knew he could guide the way. He and his brothers would know the truth of his surmise, and know it soon. Faster. The drive became a charge. The Space Marines encountered parties of orcs and smashed through them with the punch of a maglev train. They left nothing recognizable in their wake. Behind them, the pursuit howled and grew, but it was not about to catch them. As he followed the grid, reading the language of energy, Hagarin knew his way around the ship better than the orcs did themselves. The salamander's squads changed direction constantly. They plunged down one corridor, then another. They zigzagged in three dimensions, taking left and right without pattern or rhythm, rising up a deck in order to drop more quickly down three more. They could not be anticipated. Hagarin knew why the sounds of the pursuit were only becoming bigger, not closer. The orcs kept losing track of their movements. The salamanders plunged deeper and deeper into the maze of the ship, deeper and deeper into its Xenos obscenity. The walls and floor were caked with grime, both industrial and organic. The lighting was erratic, flickering and browning out much of the time, then suddenly glaring bright. The ship's architecture remained a savage patchwork, metal welded to metal in slapdash fashion, as impossibly dense and solid as its creators. Some sections seemed unfinished, others damaged, while still others were simply littered with piles of scrap iron. Metal, whether waste, wreckage, or caprice, reached from the walls or decks with jagged fangs. And everywhere, orc graffiti covered the walls and ceilings. Crude, snarling faces, clenched fists, and bloody axe blades were the favorite images. Surrounding the art were scrawled slogans, many of them painted in blood. The orcish glyphs were unintelligible to Hagarin. They did not torture eye, mind, and soul in the manner of chaos lithography. These were simply brute aggression transmuted into text. Down. Deeper.
"Brother Hagarin," Nelius said, "you must be very careful not to die, or the rest of us will never find our way out of this ship."
"In which case we'll just have to kill it," Babarin grunted. They were, by Hagarin's estimate, three decks up and a few hundred meters aft of the target. The path ahead would take them along a catwalk from which they would drop down a level and take another corridor that passed through a large open area. It frustrated Hagarin that he could not anticipate more of the nature of the spaces before the salamanders reached them. To know where he was going but not what he was passing through seemed a reckless approach. His guesses were no more than that. And he guessed that what lay ahead might be an assembly hall of some kind. It was loud enough to be one. Even from this distance, and with the echoing hunt shaking the walls to the rear, the cacophony up ahead was deafening. The salamanders paused. The noise before them was as rage-filled as what was behind. They might be rushing to throw themselves into the jaws of a pincer movement. After a moment, as his lyman's ear resolved the noise into more discreet parts, Hagarin realized that the uproar was not another orc contingent heading their way. He heard chaos, roars, weapons fire, the sounds of battle.
"Well?" Babirin asked.
"That is our route," Hagarin pointed out.
"I feel left out," Nelius said.
Babirin laughed for the first time since Malsibar's briefing. Hagarin felt his own lips twitch, out of practice though they now were with expressing emotion.
"The anvil calls, brothers," Babirin said, and took the catwalk.
It did call, Hagarin thought, as he followed. War was what they and all other space marines had been bred to wage. Some of his brothers embraced it more fanatically than others, and some saw it as a regrettable necessity. But it defined them. They were war. And now battle called with its siren song, and the prosecution of their mission demanded that they answer the summons. Down the catwalk, over its rail, along the corridor. Armored footsteps bringing the beat of Vulcan's hammer to the struggle ahead. The passageway was a wide one, ending at a large double door. Babirin and Nelius barreled into it and knocked it flying from its hinges. The salamanders burst into the vast chamber. Before them was war, between Orc and Eldar.